All right then. Good morning. This is Jennifer Carr. I'm Vice Chair of the APC, and I will be chairing the meeting today with Brendan Ferry, unable to join us. So I will call this meeting of the TRPA Advisory Planning Commission to order. The date is Wednesday, April 14th, and it is 9:32 by my computer, and we are here on our virtual webinar. The first item on the agenda is the roll call to determine the quorum. Go ahead, Tracy.
Mr. Olling?
Present.
Mr. Booth?
Present.
Mr. Calicrate? Ms. Carr?
Present.
Ms. Chandler? Ms. Chandler, I do see you there,
Yes,
but you look like.
I'm here. I'm sorry, I was having trouble unmuting. Thank you.
No problem. Thank you. Mr. Drake?
Present.
Mr. Gavon? Ms. Jacobson? Ms. Jacobson? Do see Ms. Jacobson online, but she is self-muted. Mr. Plemmel?
Here.
Ms. Roverud?
Present.
Ms. Stala? Ms. Stala? Mr. Teixeira?
Good morning.
Mr. Smoky?
Here.
Mr. Young?
Good morning.
Madam Chair, we have a quorum.
Tracy, was that with 10? Is that 10 without the two that we are that are on our list without their assent?
It's 10 without the two that appear to be here, but we can't hear them.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Just a quick reminder to our APC members that are here. That's a bare quorum. So unless Crystal and Ellery come on, we need everyone to stay with us through the meeting today to guarantee a quorum. Thank you.
I'll be here. Madam Chair.
Go ahead, Steve.
So I'm just seeing like a connect to go to webinar on my screen, but not the actual meeting visual. I don't know if other people are having the same issue.
All right, so I can see a slide that says call to order and determination of a quorum. You don't see that, Steve?
I do not.
This is John Marshall again. Does any other member have that same issue?
No, sir. I feel like I'm up and ready to go. This is Eric.
Maybe I should try jumping on the webinar again.
Yeah, why don't you do that, Steve? We want to make sure that you can see the presentations. For those that joined us close to 9:30, there are technical difficulties with the video camera, so you can't see each other, and you don't have that control, but you should be able to see the slide deck.
Okay, I will try again. Thank you.
Hi everyone, Crystal. This is Josh with IT. I just want to let you know that I am looking into the camera issue and I have a support
case going
with GoToWebinar.
Well, we're waiting for Steve. Okay, yeah, go ahead, Steve.
Madam Chair, this is John Marshall. I'm just trying to see if Ellery or Crystal can, while we're waiting for Steve, Ellery or Crystal, are you back to your computers, or can you give us a thumbs up that you're hearing and are present for the role?
Madam Chair and Mr. Marshall, I'm back on and I have the appropriate visual on my screen. Thank you.
Okay, I think Jennifer, we're ready to go.
Excellent, Steve. Yes, thank you. One last check on Ellery. Are you able to unmute? And all right, how about Crystal? Okay. Well, hopefully we'll be able to mark them present and active as we get started, assuming they ask questions or whatnot. But in the meantime, we do have a quorum. So thank you, Tracy. I will now go over the meeting rules for the day. To observe the meeting, go to trpa.gov. Under the calendar header, click on Advisory Planning Commission Meeting, Online Meeting for April 14th, 2021. There you will find a link to the public webinar hosted on GoToWebinar. To address APC members directly with your comments, please utilize the hand-raising function in the control panel of the GoToWebinar, which you will see under the red microphone. At the appropriate time for public comments, please raise your hand by clicking on the hand icon, and a TRPA staff member will unmute you and indicate that you can begin your public comment. Please state your name at the beginning of your comment. If you have requested a reasonable accommodation from TRPA and have been provided a unique PIN number for dial-in, you will be unmuted at the time you requested to make your public comment. If you're using GoToWebinar's Instant Join web app, please make sure it is opened in the Google Chrome browser and that you allow access to your microphone in order to be unmuted. Finally, if you have called into the general attendee line with access code posted on the website, please be aware that this is a listen-only option. So again, if you wish to participate, you'll need to switch to the GoToWebinar. To APC members, if you wish to speak, you can alert me via the chat function or speak up when someone else isn't speaking. APC members may only use the chat function to indicate their desire to speak. This is very important that the function only be used for that purpose and not to have sidebar conversations or make any sort of comments in writing in typed in the chat function, just for indicating that you'd like to speak. If we get camera service available due to a limited amount of video feeds, please keep your cameras turned off if that becomes available later. And finally, everyone, remember to mute your mic unless you're speaking to cut down on background noise. All right, moving on to approval of the agenda. Are there any changes to the agenda?
Madam Chairman, this is John Hester. There are no changes.
Excellent. So I'll deem the agenda approved as posted for the record. All right, next. Moving on to agenda item number 3, public interest comments. If any member of the public wishes to address the Advisory Planning Commission, please use the raise hand function now, and you will be unmuted by a TRPA staff member. All public comments should be as brief and concise as possible so that all who wish to participate may do so. Testimony should not be repeated. The chair shall have the discretion to set appropriate time limits for individual speakers. We will start with 3 minutes for individuals and group representatives. And depending on how things go, we may need to limit the total time allotted for oral public comment for a specific agenda item. No extra time for participants will be permitted by ceding the time to others. Written comments received prior to the meeting were forwarded to the APC members. In the interest of efficient meeting management, I reserve the right to limit the duration of each public comment period to a total of 1 hour. Any unheard comments can be submitted via email to T. Campbell, Tracy Campbell, T-C-A-M-P-B-E-L-L at trpa.gov, and will be forwarded to all APC members. Please note that the Advisory Planning Commission is prohibited by law from taking immediate action on or discussing issues raised by the public that are not listed on the agenda. So Tracy, go ahead and let us know if there are folks that are interested in providing public comment at this time.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is Catherine Hanglin with TRPA. I'll help you with public comment today. And at this time, I see no hands raised to make a public comment.
Thank you, Catherine. I'll give it another 30 seconds or so, just in case people are having any technical difficulties. Okay, Catherine, has the status changed at all? Do we have any public comments?
Yes, Madam Chair, Melissa, Clark. You are self-muted now. If you unmute yourself, you can address the APC.
Are you able to hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay. I'm not sure if this is the appropriate time for my question, so you can just tell me this isn't the time and I'll stop. I was wondering about in the area home properties that are less than half an acre, because of the current struggle with rentals in the area, are you looking at allowing people to put small cottages, as long as they're approved through the El Dorado County, allowing people to put some small cottages on their properties? If the property is under half an acre.
Ms. Clark, this is John Marshall. I'm counsel with the agency.
Hi, John.
This is just a period for you to make comments, not really ask questions.
Okay, sorry.
For your information, there is an ongoing housing effort that I believe is listed on, I don't know if you participated in that working group at all, but that is also listed on our website. And if we can, I think on the website, you'll be able to navigate to the housing working group. But that's
okay,
a question we are working on.
Thank you.
Thank you for that clarification and reminder, John. Are there any other public comments during this time?
Madam Chair, there are no other hands raised to make a public comment.
Great. Thank you, Catherine.
Madam Chair, this is Eric. I think I'll just pipe up and say that the name of that working group, if she's looking for it, is, I didn't get her name, but the name of the working group that works on housing is called the Tahoe Living Working Group. That might help refine it. Tahoe Living Working Group.
Thank you, Eric. All right, so we're now on agenda item number 4 for the disposition of the minutes. We have a set of minutes from March 10th, 2021 on page 7 of your packets. Are there any comments or questions from APC members?
Madam Chair.
Is that Steve? Go ahead.
Yeah. I just wanted to, again, compliment, I believe it's Tracy now doing the minutes. These are really stellar, extremely well done with extremely technical material. So thank you.
Thank you, Steve. I would echo that.
If no one has any comments or questions or changes, Madam Chair, I'd be prepared to move the minutes as presented.
Are there any additional comments or questions, or are we ready to have someone second the motion?
Madam Chair, right. I'll second. This is Garth.
Thank you, Garth. All right, so all those in favor of approval of the minutes from March 10, 2021, please say aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. All right, so straight into the meat of the meeting here on agenda item 5 for the public hearing. Agenda item 5A is a briefing on the threshold update initiative regarding the existing nitrate deposition threshold standard and implementation program. The TRPA staff report can be found on page 25 of your packet after the February 10th minutes. The presentation will be broken down into three parts as indicated on your agenda, and we will take questions after all the presentations are complete. So first, in a minute, I'll turn it over to Joanne Marchetta to introduce and tee up our discussion today. But as we heard at the March meeting, if you were in attendance then, this is a really big deal. In addition to, as John asked, everyone who's here as part of the quorum be active and engaged and stay on to ensure we maintain a quorum, I also would recognize that it's super easy during video meetings to consider multitasking, but please resist that urge. Turn your phone upside down, whatever you need to do, because this is a really big deal for the TRPA and the basin. And I would encourage everyone to ask questions and engage in the meeting. So with that, I will turn it over to Joanne Marchetta, who again will tee up the item, followed by Dan Segan, Michelle Glicker, and Melanie Sloan. So go ahead, Joanne.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and good morning, everyone. As we said, we are going to be combining all three presentations together, and I'll be teeing this up. I want to make a few important points right up front to set some context. So this is going to take me a few minutes, so bear with me. Today, we are bringing a final package of transportation amendments. So the APC today is being asked to make an affirmative recommendation to the governing board on what is a proactive and comprehensive package of change. It's to our thresholds, to the regional plan, and to the code. And that package is going to bring Tahoe's transportation and land use system fully up to date with really the needs of our 21st century that we're in. You're going to recall, Jennifer mentioned this last month, we briefed APC on the proposals to familiarize you with them. Nonetheless, I think it's fair to say we can agree that transportation can be a hard system to understand, all of its moving parts, because it's complex. And our task today in presenting the final package for your recommendation is going to be to help you see what we're proposing to accomplish and how all these different pieces fit together, and really to help you see that we're aligning all parts of the compact system, the threshold goals, you know, which are the top of the pyramid, the plans that implement those goals, the project assessments, and then even our funding targets. We're doing this for the first time ever in transportation to better achieve an integrated land use and transportation vision that was set out in our regional plan. So this is a vastly improved and far more coherent system because our regulatory system of thresholds, plans, and project assessment is now actually married to the transportation funding strategy to implement all of it. So, you know, as Jennifer alluded to, we are here on the precipice of something big for Tahoe. You're going to see later in the presentation, we have about 150 threshold standards. And it has been one of our top priorities since 2015 to update and bring current those thresholds that we adopted 40 years ago that no longer are providing meaningful guidance for our programs and management. So something to be aware of, all prior adopted thresholds either prevented something bad or restored something that was lost. None until now have ever oriented to creating something new, creating a necessary desired outcome. This is a first, and we're recommending the first new threshold in 40 years in a new category for sustainable Tahoe. And like our clarity threshold, it sets the desired outcome. And this outcome is an integrated land use and transportation system for Tahoe, which is basically the desired outcome for Tahoe's built environment that was set as the goal in the 2012 regional plan update. So this new threshold addresses and delivers on the compact's directive to reduce reliance on the private automobile by making more efficient use of other transportation modes. You know, and without this change, what we've been doing for decades is making this kind of futile attempt to motivate multi-millions of dollars in land use and transportation projects by penalizing a few annual residential allocations if we didn't reach our VMT goals. So this new 25-year threshold goal is linked instead to adaptive change every 2 years with regulatory implementation milestones of the RTP every 4 years. And this is more frequent adaptive management than we outlined last month. So we've been making changes even over the last month, and this is one of the many changes that we've made in response to stakeholder concerns, and staff will outline other adjustments that we've made in response to continuing stakeholder comments. So then we go ahead and improve and align every level of the transportation system to the others in order to meet that new threshold goal. So Dan is going to show you how the new threshold depends on meeting some interim progress milestones that implement the RTP, and that we tied success to finding new transportation funding. Then Michelle is going to outline how we didn't just take the RTP as it was. This next 2020 RTP update has tailored improvements that better implement our transportation system and meet the new threshold. And then Melanie is going to show you that we actually went down to, you know, into the weeds. We left no stone unturned. And even though Tahoe's growth is capped so that new and redevelopment accounts for only a small increment, about 7% of new VMT, nonetheless, we've gone ahead and redesigned the project assessment and mitigation to make sure that development has no unmitigated new VMT. So every project is going to pay a fee to help fund the larger transportation programs, and larger projects are then going to have to add on-the-ground transportation mitigation. Let me spend a few minutes on some what I consider to be more arcane background of what you're going to see here. The package has another less obvious benefit. It not only better implements the regional vision of the regional plan and regional transportation plan, but today's changes fully meet and even overachieve on an important set of statewide policies and standards of both Nevada and California. And in fact, we're required to implement certain California policy as the designated Metropolitan Planning Organization and the California Regional Transportation Planning Agency. So first, that's why you read in the staff summary that the plan meets and exceeds statewide GHG reduction targets for the transportation sector. This is for both the new Nevada Climate Plan and California AB 32. Those targets are set by CARB for each MPO. And we almost doubled CARB's GHG reduction target with the strategies that are included in this RTP. Secondly, we more than meet California's SB 375 policies for implementing GHG reduction from our land use and transportation system. So California, a decade ago, required MPOs to integrate land use and transportation by creating a system for compact, walkable, bikeable, transit-oriented development in town centers that would reduce VMT. TRPA is the only MPO in the state that uses regulatory authority to shift our legacy land use pattern and create that compact development. And we couple that with transit, trails and technology improvements in the RTP so that people can drive less. All of those sustainable communities implementing strategies and incentives are adopted into our regional plan and into the RTP, and we are considered, in fact, the poster child for SB 375 sustainable communities strategy implementation across the state of California. Finally, third, there is a new California statute called SB 743 that was passed to then implement the GHG reduction of SB 375 at the project level. And because all California local governments now have to use SB 743 to analyze and mitigate projects for GHG reduction, to avoid two sets of differing requirements, we've aligned our project analysis to it with some targeted adjustments, kind of tailor this to best reflect Tahoe's projects. So TRPA's approach has been similar to SB 743 for decades because we've used BMT analysis. Now with the project assessment amendments, both of these systems are aligned. So, with all of that, I hope you can say we've met the best of both. When we implement today's package, we're not only going to meet what the compact requires, we're also going to meet and exceed state policies, AB 32 and Nevada's climate plan, the sustainable communities land use standards for compact transit-oriented bikeable walkable development of SB 375, and the project assessment methods for GHG reduction of SB 743. We think that's a home run, and we think that's basis enough for you to recommend today's package. It's been a long road getting here. What we know from 50 years of experience at TRPA is that this kind of systems change is often a mix of regulation, incentive, and funding partnership. We've combined all three into today's recommended approach. Some of our stakeholders have wanted more regulatory hammers. Others have wanted more incentives. And still others wanted more specificity about funding. We honestly have had endless debate with different advocates about what the right mix of strategies is to deliver this new transportation system structure. And we've been at this for, depending on how you count, going on about 4 years. We've had hundreds of meetings and thousands of hours of explanation and input and adjustments. And we think we have finally hit and set the right mix and use the right tools in the right part of the system to achieve these different desired ends. And we believe we've settled on the right policy compromise that's going to be acceptable to the governing board when we take this in a couple weeks. What we hope you see is that until today, our 40-year-old BMT standard has never been related to or tied in any way to the implementation of Tahoe's transportation vision in the regional transportation plan. Today's recommendations are a total remake that finally, 40 years later, we can now align the desired outcome with the plans, projects, and funding needed to deliver what everyone has been clamoring for, which is a first-rate Tahoe transportation system that serves the needs of all of our users. Staff is going to consolidate our presentations today. We're going to walk through all three recommended actions before we open it up to you for questions and comments. So you're going to be asked at the end to do three things. You're going to be asked to recommend the new transportation and sustainable communities threshold standard that's now based on VMT per capita and that repeals and replaces the outdated air quality nitrate standard that was measured by a cap on VMT. Secondly, you'll be asked to recommend amendments to the regional plan goals and policies. Some of those amendments adopt the enhancements to the RTP as conforming amendments to the goals and policies of the regional plan. other regional plan amendments actually implement the new threshold standard. And then finally, you're going to be asked to recommend the code changes that implement this modified project assessment. And this is also to conform the project review to the new threshold standard. So we're going to ask for your affirmative recommendation to proceed with the package as presented. If there's any direction needed to refine details, those will go to the governing board for final decision on the package in 2 weeks at the end of this month at our governing board meeting. So with that, I think I'll turn this over to Dan to start with the presentation on the threshold.
Good morning, Madam Chairman and members of the Commission. Dan Segan, TRPA staff for the record. Thanks for that introduction, Joanne. If we could go to the next slide. I think Joanne gave a good high-level view of the system, and I want to start with a little more context on the threshold update side of this. And this is a slide many of you have probably seen before, maybe last time of your orientation, but it's one I like to give in many of the threshold update talks to remind people of the importance of the threshold standard. And this is something that we call the TRPA wheel. And the wheel outlines everything that TRPA does, from preparing and adopting a regional plan to implementing that regional plan through permitting and compliance, implementing that plan through the environmental improvement program, and collaborating outside of the region with others to help implement that plan. And the goal of all of that activity and what's in the center of that wheel is achieving and maintaining thresholds. And that's not just because we say it is, that's the compact directive for TRPA as an agency, that we adopt threshold standards that establish the broad goals for conservation and environmental quality within our region, and then we lead the collaborative effort to ensure that those threshold standards are attained and maintained. Next slide, please. And given the importance of these threshold standards, many may be surprised about what's actually in those standards. So as some of you might know, we've got a threshold standard that directs us to protect habitat for the Canada goose. Next slide, please. But we have no threshold standards related to wildfire risk within our region. Next slide, please. We've got threshold standards for the protection of deer habitat within the Tahoe region. Next slide, please. But we have no threshold standards adopted for our transportation system. Next slide, please. And really, that's part of the reason why we're here today. And in short, we've let our plans get ahead of our goals, and we've gotten a bit complacent. And instead of actually updating our goals, which are established within our threshold standards, we've let others redefine for us what those goals were established for in the first place. As Joanne mentioned, the vast majority of our 148 threshold standards were adopted over 40 years ago. And the update that we're proposing today for the VMT standard is probably something that we should have proposed about 20 years ago, when in 2001, the threshold evaluation first identified that the relationship between VMT and NOx emissions had changed. And the science for the TMDL had started to come out and identify fine sediments as the primary cause of declining clarity within our lake, and not increasing algal growth as was thought in 1982 at the time the standard was adopted. And if we didn't adopt it then, we probably should have adopted this change or recommended the change when we adopted the regional plan update in 2012, after two additional threshold evaluations had identified the same thing, that the original goal of this standard, promoting clarity of the lake by reducing nitrogen emissions, had likely already been attained because cars were getting cleaner and cleaner, and the standard no longer served its original intent. Next slide, please. But it's actually kind of lucky that we didn't do it then, because as Joanne mentioned, this isn't just about a single threshold. We have a whole suite of threshold standards adopted across 9 categories to date that over the past 4 years, we've spent a lot of time with our partners at the Science Advisory Council asking and thinking about rather mundane questions. Things like, what types of measures should be a threshold standard? And what types of measures should be placed in other parts of our system? How should a threshold standard system, or how should a threshold standard be written? And where should they live within our system? And all of that work laid the foundation for us to update our threshold standards with a more robust system overall and better integrate that into our management system. And today we are bringing forward the first threshold standard since the governing board adopted this new framework for managing our threshold standards. Next slide, please. And as Joanne mentioned, the road here has been a long one, and depending on when you start your clock for this process, we're probably in about the fourth year of this effort. And the work we're talking about today, that's culminating today, really had its origins in the threshold update work plan when we first identified that the VMT standard should be a part of this initial update of threshold standards, and the APC's convening of a transportation measures working group, which surveyed the entire transportation landscape and identified which measures were good for which things, to the Science Council's work with us to how the threshold standard should work, integrating best practice from other systems for how they've written their goals and how they've written their standards, all the way through to this past summer when we organized a technical advisory committee that met with us three times over the course of the summer on how best to formulate this new threshold standard, what information should be used, how should that information be put together, and what should our target be. And that's leading up to today, hopefully to your recommendation that the governing board later this month adopt, as Joanne mentioned, the first threshold standard that establishes a collaborative goal for the partners of the region to work towards. And it establishes that goal in a new threshold standard category, transportation and sustainable communities. Next slide, please. And so we started this process with really the fundamental question that the Bi-State Compact directs us to start the process with, which is, what are we trying to accomplish by establishing this threshold standard goal? What are we trying to do with it? And we know that the old threshold standard was motivated by concerns over NOx emissions and clarity loss. But we realized rather early on in this process that that's not why people were talking about VMT today. That the whole discourse had changed over the last 40 years. And we're now talking about something very different. And a little over 6 months ago now, we identified and formally endorsed three core goals to achieve with this new standard: promoting regional mobility, reducing greenhouse gas emissions, and reducing the dependence on the automobile. This is a compact directive. Fundamentally allowing people to get around the region in ways other than by using their automobile. And those three things are often what people refer to as building a more sustainable community. Next slide, please. And that's a community where overall GHG emissions are lower. People have options to get around in ways other than their automobile. They can walk, they can bike, and overall live healthier lifestyles because they're not dependent on their automobile and they're not stuck in traffic all day. And fortunately for us, we're not the first community or region to think about how we do this. How do we create a more sustainable environment and a more joyful experience for all travelers within our region? Cities and states throughout the country and really throughout the world have thought about this question and all arrived at the same solution to that question, that we need to better coordinate what we're doing in our transportation and our land use sector. And I think that realization is really a fundamental reflection on an observation of what has happened over the past really 100 years of development, where we've allowed our land use development to drive what we do in our transportation system. We'd build a new outlet mall somewhere on the outskirts of a city, and then build a four-lane highway to allow people to get there. We'd build a new subdivision a little bit farther out in the suburbs and then expand the existing roadway network to allow people to get there. And as this process repeated itself, in city after the, or all around the country, people began to reevaluate the results that we were actually seeing on the ground and whether it was delivering on the promise and whether it was really delivering a better life for the people inhabiting those communities. And really what people started to identify is that when you continually build out and then expand your transportation infrastructure to reach those new far-flung destinations, what you end up with is people spending longer times in their car trying to drive to the next thing that you've built. And that's a really broken cycle. That was never the intention. It was always about convenience and building a better life. But we're fortunate because in the Tahoe region, we opted out of that loop and that broken cycle a little over 40 years ago when we decided to not build any more subdivisions and to stop expanding our roadway. But stopping the cycle is only one part of the problem, or addressing the problem. Next slide, please. Because really, we're not content just stopping the problem and being like everyone else. We're actually trying to solve this problem. And the way that you solve this problem is that rather than letting your land use decisions drive your transportation decisions, you coordinate those together. And what that fundamentally means, as Joanne alluded to, is that you do two things. First, you provide people with more transportation options and try to make those options more appealing than the automobile. And second, you concentrate people in places where they can take advantage of those options, where they've got the bike trails and the transit opportunities to get from place to place. And later today, Michelle is going to provide a little bit more detail on our RTP and how we provide more transportation options for people to get from A to B so that they don't have to hop in their car each day. And then Melanie is going to talk a little bit more about the refinements that we're making to our land use to help put people in the places where they can take advantage of those options. And I think it's important that we think about the options that Melanie's presenting today as refinements, because our 2012 regional plan already included much of this thinking, and the people that developed it and the environment in which it created has its roots in the same period when people really started to think about how do we solve this endless problem of building out and then expanding our infrastructure to get there. And this is the same time period where the state of California passed SB 375, as Joanne referenced, which really required all MPOs to better integrate land use and transportation planning, with the goal of reducing emissions, creating more environmentally friendly communities, having more sustainable development, and ultimately allowing each of us to spend less time in our cars as we go about our day doing the things that we want. So the 2012 regional plan really started this process for the Tahoe region. It included things that looked at density, coverage, and transfer incentives, all with an eye on focusing getting more people in the places where they could take advantage of transit and trails. And so what Michelle and Melanie will be talking about in a couple minutes is giving you more details on how we're going to continually refine those systems and better encourage those outcomes that we want and better coordinate land use and transportation planning. Next slide, please. And because we're not the first community to look at doing this, we're also not the first to think about how you measure your success in creating a more sustainable environment and getting people out of their cars. And the measure that we've landed on is one that states and regions around the world have landed on when they think about how do you measure the success. And that's VMT per capita, which is fundamentally how much does each individual in your community have to drive each day to do the things that they need and want to do. And VMT per capita has a couple qualities that make it very beneficial for this. First and foremost, a VMT per capita actively reflects the efficiency with which the transportation system interacts with the land use system. And we know from observation that communities that are sprawling and where people have to get in their car and drive long distances each day have higher VMT per capita, and communities that are more compact and have a better mix of development in their land use and their centers have lower VMT per capita. So it actively captures what we are trying to create, both with our regional plan and our regional transportation plan. Next slide, please. We also know that the measure responds well, or responds in the intended way that we might expect, to changes in that system. So if you imagine an existing world where we had three residents, each that were driving 10 a day, and so they had 10 VMT per capita, and then we add a new resident who has to drive 30 miles each day. We see that through the addition of this new resident, VMT per capita goes up. And that's what you might expect if you build that new residential development in some far-flung part of your region where someone is more auto-dependent. Next slide, please. However, if you put that next resident in a town center or in a region or a part of your region where the person has to drive a shorter distance to the places they want to go, or chooses to drive less because they have other options such as taking transit or taking or walking or biking there, and that person drives less than the existing people in your community, what you see and what happens is that VMT per capita goes down. And that's what we're trying to create. As we're trying to create a system where people have the opportunity to drive less. Next slide, please. So in the last presentation, a little over a month ago, we spent a fair bit of detail going into our three-step process with the Transportation Technical Advisory Working Group on how we arrived at the threshold standard goal. And we, over a course of meetings, we talked about what would be the best data sources to measure VMT within our region. What's the best way and what are the best methods to measure the number of travelers that are working within our region? And we had those first two discussions to establish the level of VMT per capita within the Tahoe region today. And the recommendation before you integrates what we believe is a best of breed approach to measuring both of those. And then finally, we engaged in step three, where we looked at everything we're trying to accomplish with our regional transportation plan and everything that we are trying to accomplish with our regional plan, and said, if we were able to be successful in completing the bike and pedestrian path around the lake, if we had a fivefold increase in transit ridership within our region, if we were successful in centralizing future development and redevelopment within our region in our town and regional centers, what would VMT per capita within our region look like? And we identified that we believe it would be possible to achieve a 6.8% reduction in VMT per capita by 2045. And as Joanne mentioned, we then went through the exercise of comparing that to what we are obligated to do on the California side of the region as an MPO under SB 375 today. And the goal is far more ambitious than that goal established for our region under 375. First of all, the 375 goal clearly only applies to the California side of the region and sets a target about half as large as what we are hoping to accomplish by 2035 with the proposed threshold standard today. And our threshold standard also extends that target, targeting additional reductions beyond 2035 all the way to 2045. So what we're proposing today is a goal that's far more ambitious than what was on the table for us prior to this. Next slide, please. And in the March meeting, we also spent some time working through the different elements of the implementation framework. And there's really three core elements of that. So the first is that we're establishing a set of milestones whereby we evaluate progress towards our goal. So as you recognize, we're establishing a goal today, or recommending a goal that won't be achieved for 24 years. And I don't think any of us wants to wake up 23 years into the future and realize nothing has happened. So in the proposal before you, there's a series of milestones whereby we evaluate progress. And between those milestones, there's a series of adaptive management reports every 2 years that allow us to correct course on the way to our milestone to ensure that we're making progress as expected towards our goal. The second core element of that implementation system is the provision of independent guidance. I think we all recognize that no single entity is has the complete picture of what's going on within the transportation and land use system. And it's going to be core as we adaptively manage towards this goal that we bring in a multitude of points of view to ensure that we're getting the best guidance and we course correct along the way. And the third element is what we call triggered management responses, which really we hope never happen. But what the triggered management responses are specific things that happen if milestones are not reached. So if the course correction in the adaptive management process is not successful and we fall behind, these triggered responses provide a bit of a backstop to ensure that we start to catch up. Next slide, please. And the core of the framework and the core of the proposal that is before you today is materially the same as the one we presented last month. So I'm not going to go through it in detail. But what I would like to do is highlight four modifications to that framework. The first, primarily ministerial or administrative, and the three really improvements that are the results of numerous conversations with stakeholders and suggestions for how we improve this overall proposal. Next slide, please. So the first is the administrative change, which I mentioned. And that is actually finalizing the text of the threshold standard and incorporating the data sets of record. This is the HPMS data source for VMT and the Tahoe effective population model estimate for population within our region to arrive at the final phrasing of the threshold standard. And the second is actually within this category, the recommendation that we establish a new threshold standard category, the first since the threshold standards were adopted in 1982. And that's the threshold standard category for transportation and sustainable communities. And fundamentally, that was a result of our reflection on where should this threshold standard live? Because as Joanne mentioned, every one of our existing threshold standards tries to do one of two things. It tries to restore something that was lost. Here we're thinking about the clarity of the lake or SEZs that have been degraded, or protect something that we feared losing. Often these were our existing air quality standards where the framers were trying to protect the air quality within the region for future generations or to protect our forests from degradation. And this standard is fundamentally different. Its goals didn't fit well within our existing categories because now we're talking about creating a more sustainable community and reducing reliance on the automobile, which didn't necessarily nest well underneath things like air and water quality. And it's also different because it's an aspirational goal and a hopeful goal. It is a goal for us to work towards creating something that never was within our region so that future visitors and residents of our region have a better transportation and land use experience than you and I have enjoyed. Next slide, please. The second change that was made in it was a modification to our adaptive management process. And primarily, and through discussion with a number of stakeholders, what we heard were two things about it, is that they wanted the adaptive management system to be more robust and better integrated into what we already do. Because we recognize that often things are most successful when you don't set about creating something completely new, but when you modify the existing things that you're doing to make them better fit. And in doing so, we've tried to balance two things. We've tried not to be overly prescriptive and try to imagine that we can guess tomorrow's challenges or solutions today. But we've also tried to provide stakeholders with some certainty that we are going to stay on track. And I think the solution that we've arrived on is an elegant one. Primarily what that does is it maintains the existing two-year adaptive management cycle. So what that means is every 2 years, we're going to be doing progress checks, summarizing how we are doing relative to our goal, how we have done on project implementation, how we are doing on the land use side, and producing a report. What we have added is, and what we've highlighted in the blue on the top, are we've clarified what happens at the report that is produced just before the regional transportation plan. So here we're talking about 2024, 2028, and so on and so forth, every 4 years. And what happens in this 2024 report is this is a precursor to the establishment of our regional transportation plan, sustainable community strategy, and it's intended to summarize all of the information necessary to produce that report. What we have added is a requirement that in development of that report, that the advisory body and the report evaluate progress relative to the milestone we've established for 2024. And that advisory body then looks at progress. And if we're on track, then the advisory body has broad discretion to provide any recommendations that they see fit that would improve or implementation of programs or otherwise accelerate threshold standard attainment. So if they think we can get to our goals faster, great, include those recommendations. And then we transfer those recommendations to the governing board. If, however, we're following on the bottom track and they find that we've fallen behind, what we have now required is that that advisory body produce a suite of recommendations that would get us back on track by the next four-year target or be reasonably expected to get us back on track by the next four-year milestone. So if they find that we are behind in 2024, they need to produce a suite of recommendations that would get us back on track by 2028. And a very aggressive turnaround. And the further requirement that the governing board needs to adopt a suite of recommendations or program modifications that would be reasonably expected to achieve that next four-year milestone. And then those would be incorporated within the regional transportation plan. So what we've created here is a cycle whereby every 4 years, we're looking at progress. And if we are not on track with what we expected, we adopt a suite of modifications to our existing programs that get us back on track by the next four-year target. An incredibly robust adaptive management process. Next slide, please. We also heard a number of comments from stakeholders that they wanted more details around the advisory body. And so we made modifications to the goals and policies in 5.1, 5.2, and 5.3 to provide people with the additional details that they requested, to provide details around who would be sitting on this advisory body, and that it would be local and regional transportation representatives with expertise in implementation and project development, that the advisory body would include a member of the public and a member from an environmental group. And we also provided additional detail on what would be included in advisory body reports, that they would be summarizing metrics like VMT within our region, mode share within our region, that they would be looking at the outputs and evaluating project and program effectiveness and providing those recommendations. And that they would be doing so in a specified time frame, the second quarter of even years. So the second quarter of 2022 would be the first, the second quarter of 2024 would be the second. And we also clarified the process for transmitting those reports to the governing board and acting on those, as well as the expectations for what the governing board would do in terms of if we fall behind, that they would be adopting that set of modifications that would get us back on track within the next 4 years. Next slide, please. And finally, and maybe embarrassingly, what we did is we included what would happen in the future. So TSC 1 is Transportation and Sustainable Communities Threshold Standard 1. And I say embarrassingly because we sent out the errata last night because somehow this didn't make it into the packet. But one of the things we heard over the last month or so in conversations with stakeholders was that maybe 6.8% wasn't aggressive enough. And I think we vigorously disagree with that. And we do think that the regional plan and regional transportation plan set bold visions for our future that we will be working towards. But we recognize that maybe it is possible that we would achieve this target early. And what would happen then? And so what we did is we modified the goals and policies to set a specific action that would be triggered when the standard is achieved, when the standard is achieved in 2045, or if earlier. And what we said would happen was if and when the standard is achieved, we would convene the technical advisory body and we would have them review everything and recommend a new target. Because if we're that successful, we don't want to rest on our laurels here. So we want to continue to look towards the future. That is my final slide. And with that, I will turn it over to Michelle.
Thank you, Dan. Michelle Glickert, TRPA Transportation Planning. Now I'm going to provide a brief overview of the Regional Transportation Plan, outreach, and focus on those policies, changes needed to bring the transportation system in line with the new VMT standard and achieve our transportation goals. Next slide. I shared with you last time our vision and framework for the Regional Transportation Plan. That's through connecting trails around the lake and to activity centers, keeping transit free and adding more shuttles, making transit frequent and adding regional connections, along with locally completing our communities and our neighborhoods with transit and trails, but also using transportation management, including parking management and technology, and then adaptive management to stay on track to reach our goals, promoting mobility and reducing GHG. I greatly appreciated your time and comments on the policies last month. Shortly thereafter, we released our final draft of the RTP that incorporated stakeholder meetings and public feedback. Next slide. This is a nice summary of all of our outreach to date. Our over 55 comments have been received and incorporated into the final draft. Several comments received expressed the need for getting projects completed faster, the need for more data and evaluation of day user impacts, support for more bike and ped improvement, support for more exploring on-demand transit shuttles, and the need for evacuation planning. The majority of the edits to the document were made in the following sections: the plan itself, adding details about day visitors, and expanding details on mobility hubs to make sure it's clear one size does not fit all. Using roadway adaptive management, but not just for transit, for emergency response as well. And funding the plan, adding more details about the development of new transportation funding with the bi-state partnership. In our appendices, minor changes to policies, which I'm going to go over next. The project list, we defined and identified regionally significant projects and made some updates to project costs and implementation timeframes. And on the revenue narrative, we worked with our funding partners to provide the most up-to-date information on revenues, which now include federal relief funding and recent tax measures. And appendices G, data and forecasting, now includes a more robust section on trip reduction impact analysis. This is the model we use to identify the benefits of transit and trail projects, as well as travel management strategies like employer trip reduction programs and paid parking. All of your input and stakeholder meetings have made this the community's plan. The RTP elevates public desires and needs and then triangulates that with the public input and coordinated implementation strategy. We reached over 5,000 participants, including 77% who reside here. Recently on the 9th, we held our final plan hearing at the Tahoe Transportation Commission, an advisory committee to governing board. And I'm happy to report the commission provided a recommendation on the regional transportation plan. Next slide. Since we last met in March, only a few changes to the policies have occurred. In your packet today are the final changes we're seeking your recommendation for. That's within attachment D to the staff report. The transportation policies make up chapter 3 of the regional plan. We've also included in your packet those strike-through versions, helping you keep track of changes as we've been getting feedback from various committees. Through outreach and a recent webinar on the 5th, we heard the need for policy clarity and emphasis, but these edits did not change any of the analysis of the plan. Included here is policy 1.6. The policy promotes the use of zero emission vehicles. Staff proposed to add in freight and heavy duty vehicles, broadening the list of zero emission vehicles we need in the future.
Policy 2.22 about mobility hubs, the proposed language better emphasizing that one-size-fits-all concept does not work for all of our proposed transportation hubs. Next slide. For safety and operations, policy 3.4, we incorporated into emergency preparedness and response planning consideration to climate resiliency measures. This is in response to comments received from the public, as well as ongoing work in forest health. Policy 4.10, previously read, track and prepare for emerging transportation technologies. While our update was about cleaning up policies, with this change, we lost some details about facilitating ride sharing and parking management, which are really important to achieving our goals. So the change here actually retains the 2017 policy. Next slide. Lastly, for economic vitality and system preservation, we had no new changes since the public draft was released. And now that you have the big VMT picture, the plan level regional transportation policies for reducing VMT, I'm going to turn it over to Melanie Sloan. Thank you.
Hello, everyone, and thank you, Michelle. And thank you, Dan and Joanne, also for setting context for this point. As Michelle said, my name is Melanie Sloan, and I am the Senior Transportation Planner at TRPA. And I am going to now turn your attention to VMT at the project level. Next slide, please. To better implement the updated VMT threshold Dan spoke about at the project level, we are updating our project impact assessment and mitigation fee processes. The updates allow for TRPA to connect and align with our California jurisdictions, which are currently updating their impact assessment processes to use VMT as well. And that's to comply with their regulation for SB 743, which you heard Joanne discuss in the preamble to today's presentations. And as she mentioned, our processes for impact assessment have always been very similar to SB 743, but it was also worth updating so that we could expand that system and modify it to align with our California jurisdictions in that new state law. And that's so we wouldn't have two separate and possibly conflicting reviews in the region for project development. And as a result, and I think what you'll see in the presentation, which you've heard so far, you'll see that what we are recommending to you today exceeds what's required of our California jurisdictions. So when implemented, the updates to impact assessment and mitigation fee will accelerate achievement of the regional plan goals for the walkable, bikeable, transit-served region that Dan and Joanne spoke of by improved land use and transportation solutions. And that's in part through this work of incentivizing development in and near to our town and regional centers. Next slide, please. So this diagram, it's demonstrating that trip length matters and that shorter trip lengths occur in and near to our town and regional centers where we have that mix of land uses and transportation options. In the updates, the trip lengths and the location of the projects are the foundations for identifying which projects have a significant impact with VMT. The approach ensures that those regional plan goals I just mentioned, as well as the regional transportation plan update Michelle spoke of, and the implementation of the VMT threshold at the project level occurs. And so as a result, that about 7% of future VMT from development and redevelopment that Joanne mentioned, while a smaller share, it's really important that they also help us to reduce the VMT in the region. And it's going to happen through these updates of processes that focus on the location, size, and mitigations of those projects. Next slide, please. Since we saw you last March 10th, we've made some key updates to the packet, and those are shown here. And I want to emphasize this work is truly a result of working with and being responsive to stakeholders and their concerns and feedback we've received. Together, the updates focus more strongly on VMT and the location of projects and trip lengths, relies on data and instead of code for VMT calculations, streamlines assessment for projects previously analyzed according to the recommendations before you, recognizes when jurisdictions have VMT reduction programs, and then once set, ensures the mobility mitigation fee is adjusted annually for inflation. And lastly, we commit to updating the recommendation that is in the packet before you following every future adopted RTP update. Next slide. This is a flowchart of the updated processes for impact assessment and mitigation fee. And simply stated, there are three main components. The first is screening criteria that pinpoints what types of projects are of a size and in a location that require more detailed review and more types of mitigations. Standards of significance is the second component. And while that sounds wonky, it really has a simple function, and that's to define the expectations for non-screened projects based on its land use type. The third component are mitigations, which ensure those projects are contributing to VMT reductions and the implementation of that VMT threshold at the project level. As you've heard many times, and you'll hear me repeat again, in our framework, every project mitigates by paying fees. But those projects that are above the defined expectations, that's that standard of significance, they do more at the project level. So let's talk in a little more detail about each of those components. Next slide, please. Starting with screening criteria. Now, this term might be a little bit misleading, especially for those in California where the term screen suggests exemptions from additional analysis or responsibilities. And in our recommendation, that's not the case. And it's a key difference between what we are advancing in our system and that recommended under the regulation of SB 743 in California. Under our recommendation, every project mitigates by paying a fee. And so screening here is operating for a different purpose. It's drawing a line with VMT, below which a project pays a fee to mitigate and above which the project is of a type or in a location that has to do more. And again, that line is set recognizing location of project matters because of the availability of those transportation options and what destinations can easily be reached on foot, bike, transit, or when needed, short trips in a car. And that's in and near to our town and regional centers. So since we were here in March, we've worked with stakeholders to more clearly draw this line and to more narrowly focus on VMT and project location. And the changes in the packet reflect that. We've always had a level for screening under TRPA project impact assessment, and current process uses trips to do so, and that's set at 200 average daily trips. So we propose retaining that, but translating it to VMT for our town and regional centers and a half mile buffer around them. And that equates to 1,300 VMT. Everywhere else, we are proposing a 715 VMT screen that aligns with our California jurisdictions and the recommendations for SB 743, which is to use 110 average daily trips. So combined, the screening criteria we recommend is actually stricter than SB 743 and the California guidance in just about every way. Next slide, please. When we move to standards of significance, these have not changed since you last saw the framework, but it's an important component to the update, so I'm going to review it briefly here. Again, these are those defined levels above which a non-screened project must do more based on its land use type. And doing more no longer will depend on whether the VMT threshold is or is not an attainment, and that closes a loophole in our current impact assessment process. As mentioned previously, we have adopted and adapted these standards of significance, those defined expectations, specifically for Tahoe. And I'd like to say simply, the standards work, these defined expectations are working in like a three-tiered approach. The first is that smaller, less complex projects will simply pay a mobility mitigation fee. Projects that aren't quite as small or simple, they undergo further impact assessment. And if they meet those defined expectations in the standards of significance, they also will pay a mobility mitigation fee in advance. But projects that aren't screened, maybe they're more complex or larger, and they don't meet those defined expectations in the standards of significance, well, they will also pay a fee, but they'll also do more, and they'll do more through additional mitigations. Next slide, please. So let's talk about mitigations. Again, every project that generates VMT in our framework is required to mitigate, some by only paying fees, as I just discussed. But those that aren't screened, that are above those defined expectations, will pay fees and do more. and that doing more are project level requirements to reduce VMT. And by doing that, those projects will perform better than existing similar on the ground development. Changes to the mitigation elements since you last saw the framework in March include two things. One is setting an annual adjustment for the mobility mitigation fee that will use the consumer price index for the annual adjustment. Secondly, recognizing jurisdictional VMT credit programs both for impact assessment evaluation and mitigation fee. Next slide, please. So I want to take a moment to look at a couple of example projects. It pulls together those three components, and here you see two screenshots taken from an online project impact assessment tool that TRPA staff is developing. On the left, you see a multifamily residential project that I've cited in the most efficient, most connected location in a town center within the Tahoe Valley and South Shore. You will see on the left that I could put a 60-unit multifamily residential development in that location, and it would be below the 1,300 VMT screening level for our town centers. And so that project would calculate its fee and advance. However, on the right, I've located a multifamily residential project outside of the town and regional centers in a less connected, less transportation option location. And you'll see that even 25 units does not meet the screening criteria there. So a much smaller project is still over what would be 715 VMT. Because it's over, it would still be able to advance. It's just going to have to do more. And that's that project level mitigations. And of course, as has been said many times, it will also pay the mobility mitigation fee. Next slide, please. So before moving forward in the process, such as setting the final mobility mitigation fee and completing build out of the tool that those screenshots demonstrated, we needed to know what we were designing to. And that is the recommendation brought to you today for project impact assessment and mitigation fee update. Post adoption, we will develop a project list from the RTP constrained project list of VMT mitigating projects and programs, and work to set the mobility mitigation fee, and that will be done in consultation with jurisdictions and stakeholders and our development community. Our staff will continue to complete the build out of that online impact assessment tool you just saw, and we'll do that in consultation with our partner Placer County and input from consultant FAIR and peers. And once completed, it will have the ability to also provide impact assessment for our California jurisdictions for SB 743 compliance. We will develop a monitoring program for the impact assessment and fee programs, and we'll do so in partnership, using research from our partners, UC Davis, and specifically their work on project impact assessment mitigation monitoring. And finally, we'll work with our local jurisdictions to train and prepare them for rollout of the updated processes and the impact of online impact assessment tool. Next slide, please. So that concludes my discussion for project impact assessment and mitigation fee updates. And before handing over for questions, I just wanted to quickly review our schedule. We're here with you today seeking recommendation. Michelle will be going to the EIP committee on the 28th of April for a recommendation for the RTP. And then the three items before you, the threshold, the RTP, and impact assessment and fee, will be brought to the Regional Planning Implementation Committee on April 28th for recommendation, and also to the governing board for action on April 28th. And that concludes my portion. Next slide. I thank you so much for your attention, and we look forward to questions. Thank you.
All right. This is Jennifer Carr again. I think now it's our turn, APC members. Thank you, staff, for the helpful presentations, not just providing information on the packet, but also things that have changed in the last month in response to questions we asked or or comments that you've received from the public and whatnot. So I appreciate all of those updates. So at this point, I will ask questions or ask for questions and comments by the APC members. And of course, please remember to state your name for the record and for the listeners as you get started. So you can either indicate in the chat function that you have a question or a comment, or you can speak up if it's silently quiet. So who would like to start?
I'll start. My name is Susan Chandler. I'm appointee from the city of South Lake Tahoe, and I'm probably the newbie here. I wish I had been more involved in this process from the beginning, so I've been reading it with really fresh eyes. I'm very supportive of the plan. However, I would really like to see it strengthened a bit more, only because, as you know, our major transportation problems are not from the residents that live here, but they are from the people that come in from out of the basin. And when I was looking at Amendment 5.5, which is Chapter 3, it talks about economic vitality and quality of life. It says that we should be collaborating with bi-state partners to establish efficient rail, air, bus transportation in and out of Tahoe and surrounding areas. I really think that in view of recent political events, the word federal also has to be in there, because we now know that in the next few years, due to the American Jobs Plan and Biden's infrastructure, that we have access perhaps to a lot of money to rethink bringing in a rail line or more efficient public transportation from outside of the basin to inside of the basin, where the plan that has been devised would be very effective in helping these people get around. I hope that the TRPA will consider looking into this. There's going to be a lot of money available from out there that would really perhaps help our community, even if it's only by building intercept lots outside of the basin and then have better public transportation to get from outside of the basin to inside of the basin. That's my first comment. My second comment just has to do with the VMT decisions based on which projects will go forward. And I'm really hoping that there will be a way to prioritize the projects with the lower VMTs so that they get implemented first, and therefore we get the most, our community gets the most benefit from them. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Susan. Would staff like to respond to any of those comments or thoughts?
Certainly, Jennifer, if I may. This is Michelle Glickert. Thank you so much, Ms. Chandler. I greatly appreciate you getting on board. I know it is a lot. I do want to just clarify, the transportation plan does talk about efficient transportation systems, not just within our region, but actually expanding transportation to outside. So those activity centers, right, Reno and Sacramento and even the Bay Area, what we're looking at is actually adding transit from those longer, you know, for those longer trips to get people here without a car. We also have in the plan mobility hubs that aren't just in our basin, but outside of the basin. And even this summer, we're going to be starting a new pilot service from Reno to North Shore to help people get here without their cars. Along the lines, too, of communities and corridor planning, we really focus on the visitor. And that means once the visitor's here, with corridor planning, that takes into account all of the corridors around the lake and those hotspot recreation areas. Those rec sites, we're going to be using parking management, right? That means actually paid parking on site and maybe even removing parking from our roadways and pulling it off site. Parking management, more transit to our recreation sites. And along the lines of prioritizing projects, we have included in the plan a very robust section with the bi-state consultation, who have been doing just that, looking at those big projects we need to move on first that really reduce VMT and reduce GHG. So I'm excited and happy I can talk to you a little bit more offline about the regional transportation plan. Thank you.
Michelle and Madam Chair, I think for the specific, this is John Marshall, for the specific suggestion that I believe Susan had was to look at 5.5 under goal 5 and make sure that we, if necessary, that we need to add in a reference to federal partners.
I think that would be helpful for our future.
Yeah, I think so. I think we can look at that and take and see how to work that specific language in there.
Thank you, John.
Thank you.
And this is Melanie Sloan. I'd like to respond to Susan's last comment about prioritizing projects with lowest VMT. I just want to clarify by focusing and providing incentives for projects closer to our town and regional centers where we have those destinations people want and need to go to, as well as multiple transportation options, projects will be better sited and have less reliance on the automobile and, when needed, shorter trips. So I think the framework will work out the way that you're looking, Susan.
Thank you. I appreciate your comment.
All right, excellent. Thank you. Hillary, go ahead.
Thank you. This is Hillary Roperud with the City of South Lake Tahoe. Thanks to TRPA staff for bringing this forward. This is a heck of a lot of work reflected in these presentations and all the materials. Really do think changing how we think about transportation is a very good thing, and appreciate TRPA looking at the thresholds to really make a fundamental change, as Joanne described at the beginning. Also wanted to thank Melanie Sloan. She took some time last week to meet with John Hitchcock and I to better understand the project impact analysis tool, and thank you for that. Had a couple of questions, maybe a few nitpicky suggestions, but I'll hold off on those till after public comment. Just the questions. So in the DP policies, development priority policies, DP 5.6 references multiple times the exception for deed-restricted affordable and or workforce housing. And I just wanted to make sure that that was aligned with the text that's in the code, proposed text anyways. I believe the code defines affordable housing as 80% AMI or below. And I don't think there is a definition for workforce housing, but in the recommended code changes for the screened projects, it references deed restricted, low, moderate, or achievable housing, which would go beyond the definition of affordable that's in the policy. So just wanted to, maybe the staff wants to look at that one more time, make sure that that is consistent between the policies and the code language. And let's see, other questions. On the project screening, had a couple questions and talked about this with Melanie last week. So is there an ability for a project that is screened out and then is just going to pay the mobility fee? Is there an opportunity for those projects to incorporate these mobility mitigation measures to reduce their fee?
Hello, this is Melanie Sloan. I'll just jump in because you paused, Hillary. Yes, there is that option, and the code change, I think it, or the code's under 65.2.4.C.1, I believe, I don't have it in front of me, is where you would find that reference.
Okay, thank you very much.
Oh. And Hillary, I think the benefit of the tool is that that allows project proponents to add in additional, quote, mitigation measures, or in this case, it would be design features that would allow the applicant or the project proponent to see the impact of those measures, and that would then recalculate their VMT to maybe either net reduce the amount that they're going to generate, even though it's under the screen, to reduce any sort of mobility fee payment that they would have. So that's, we're not at all limiting somebody who wants to design a project that, in fact, we want to encourage people that to design projects that avoid increases in VMT.
Yeah, I think that's great. That's what I was looking for. And I think when we discussed it last week, we weren't really sure if that option was available. So I wanted to make sure that even projects that are screened out get credit for doing the things that we want to see.
They get credit by when the VMT for that project is calculated, that takes into account those, you can select a mitigation measure from the menu to see what it does to your project.
Right. And so even if you're screened out, you could still potentially reduce your fee.
Correct.
By incorporating mitigation measures. Yeah. Okay. What about...
Go ahead. I'm sorry. I'm repeating myself.
Oh, go ahead.
No. Go ahead.
What about things that are required by the local jurisdiction? I think a lot of our planning documents and regulations, and TRPA as well, require bike racks or require a frontage sidewalk to be constructed. If those are required elements of the project, do they get credit for those as well?
Hello, this is Melanie Sloan again. Those design requirements at the jurisdiction or area plan level would not count as mitigations. The mitigation strategies are separate from that. And those, so it would not count towards mitigation.
Okay. And then my last question had to do with the use of the mobility fee. I'm looking for the section here. I guess it's 65.2.5. There's two subsections here, A and B. A is related to local jurisdiction use of the fee, and then B is for more regional projects. They both refer to the EIP. Paragraph A also refers to the regional transportation plan and the 1992 air quality plan. I wasn't able to find the air quality plan, but I'm assuming there may be things in there that are not transportation related. Maybe they're related to fireplaces or generators and things like that. I'm wondering if there should be language in these two paragraphs that specifically references projects within those plans that reduce VMT, to create a nexus between the fee collection and the use of the fees? Maybe that's a question for John.
Yeah, I think this is John Marshall. I think one of the central features of what we were trying to bring through, and if we'll look at these provisions, see if we need to clarify them, but that the mobility fund contributions go to VMT reducing projects. So I think that's, we need to, if that's not done by the incorporation by reference here to these other projects, we will look at that and see if we can come up with some language to tighten that up. But that's a fundamental principle to link the contributions from mobility back to projects that are within the RTP and that reduce VMT.
Okay, yeah, thanks for that. I figured that was the intent. It just didn't really come through in the text. So, if you'd like to take a look at that again, just to make sure that that's clear and you've got the nexus there. And that's it for, one more question on, let's see, goal number 2 in the policies, policy 2.11, develop standards and guidelines for incorporating multimodal amenities in new development or redevelopment as part of local area plans. Isn't that something that maybe we'd want to apply to all of the planning and regulatory documents? Master plans, for example, code amendments. I don't know, it just struck me that there was just a reference to just the area plans when there's a lot of other planning stuff as well that it would make sense to me to incorporate those standards and guidelines for multimodal amenities into. I'm thinking of ski resort master plan or airport master plan, or park master plan, those kinds of things. Code amendments for code that regulates new development, those kinds of things.
Thank you, Hillary. This is Michelle Glickert. Great suggestion, and I'm happy to revise 2.11 policy to expand that.
Okay, thank you. That's it for my questions.
Thank you very much for that exchange. Any other follow-up from staff before we move on to the next APC member? All right, hearing none, go ahead, Smokey, your floor is yours.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. This is Cyril Smokey, Chairman of the Washoe Tribe of Nevada, California. First, I just want to say, you know, I appreciate all the hard work that everybody's done. The plans look really good. The, you know, all the years that everybody took, you know, developing this is, you know, just it just looks really good, and we're definitely in support of doing what we can to help the environmental impacts of everything that goes on around Lake Tahoe. As for the goals, I just wanted to bring up just some wording that I've noticed is when it comes to coordinating with different partners, it really just mentions local, federal, state. I would like tribes to be included in there. I know we may fall under one of those categories, but I think it's important, especially with the ongoing consultation processes that were brought down by President Biden, that it's to always include tribes just in that wording. Just in the couple that I noticed is 2.1 and 5.4. And it just anytime that there's wording that we're, you know, coordinating with different partners, I feel it's very important to include tribes in there. That way it's always in there and we don't just fall under a different subcategory, because we are, as sovereign nations, our own category. So I didn't notice exactly if it popped up anywhere else. Those are the main two ones that I did notice, but I would like to see that the, you know, tribal partners are included in that as well. Thank you.
Thank you. This is Michelle again. That is an oversight, Smokey. My apologies, because I do remember as staff us discussing it, and it looks like we might not have brought that forward. So 2.1 and 5.4, I will review that and see where, you know, tribal governments fit.
Thank you, Michelle. Jennifer, I would also just recommend staff just maybe do a word search through the documents supporting the packet, and just maybe search on one of those terms and just see where it would also be appropriate, potentially in addition to those two that that Chairman Cyril identified. Thanks. All right. I don't have anyone else in the chat queue. Would anyone else like to ask questions or make comments from the APC members?
Jennifer, this is Eric Young from Washoe.
Absolutely. Go ahead, Eric.
Good morning, everyone. I'm in support of these amendments. I take part on the transportation working group that got to review and hear about them as they develop. So this is important to try. I think it's also important to sort of recognize that the points along the way that are built in to step back and have another look, those are meant to see if we're doing better than we thought, not as well as we thought. But I think really underlying what I hope they do is allow us to test all the underlying assumptions that are here. If I were going to be negative or concerned or or raise a potential issue, it would be I'm not convinced that all the transportation modeling related assumptions that we all use in all the transportation models necessarily really fit the basin. You know, they're tested and developed in other kinds of circumstances, other kinds of communities that are not a big lake basin with lots of separate communities and spider leg reaches out to communities outside the basin. So one of the things I'm most interested in is seeing if the assumptions that all of this are based on will hold true for us up in the basin. And so I really appreciate how TRPA staff always tries to build in a continuing feedback loop to see if adjustments need to be made along the way. And I'm just kind of hoping that part of that process is it does keep in mind that a lot of the assumptions that we use in our transportation models may not quite fit in what the basin really is, but you know, maybe they do. And I think that's the really interesting test of what we're going to find out here over the coming years when we implement this. So I'm going to be in favor of it, and I'm going to be very curious to see how it actually plays out in the numbers going forward. So thank you, everybody.
Thank you, Eric. Follow-up from TRPA staff.
This is Dan Segan, for the record. I mean, I think it's a really good point that Eric's making. We've spent a lot of time with our partners and with other experts refining those assumptions, especially with regard to project effectiveness and how likely they are to reduce VMT. Because as Eric suggests, a lot of the information is captured and was developed in larger city contexts. So if you're looking through the detailed technical material we put forward, a lot of our VMT reductions are far lower than you'd see in those urban contexts. And that reflects those expectations and the guidance of experts that they're likely to produce lower benefits here. And I think part of the adaptive management process is that we revisit those assumptions as well as the larger assumptions with regard to land use, visitation, et cetera, every 4 years. And the process we built here builds off of what we did as part of the Transportation Technical Advisory Group, where we openly explore those assumptions in our forecasts with our partners to ensure that we're refining those appropriately. So appreciate the comment and look forward to working with you as we revise those and move forward.
Thank you, Dan. Eric, any follow-up, or are you good?
No, thank you. I'm good. Thank you, Dan. I appreciate it.
Awesome. All right. Crystal Jacobson is in my queue. Go ahead, Crystal.
Yes, thank you. Good morning. I just want to thank staff for the thorough presentation today and really for all the work to bring this forward. I know this was a very big lift, so thank you all for your hard work. I would just say Placer County is really appreciated. I know I've said this before, but we appreciated the opportunity to partner on this effort and are very excited to see it moving forward. We, as you know, have provided input along the way, and so really do want to thank you for considering our comments that we've provided. And then also just, and I know I've stated this before, but we, you know, Placer is doing a lot in our region to move the needle on reducing VMT. And so I think what's important for us is that in this adaptive management process, that there is recognition for each local jurisdiction's effort to really help achieve regional goals and meet threshold attainment. So that's it for me. Just want to, again, say thank you. We really appreciate the partnership and all the work that has been put into this.
Thank you, Crystal. Other APC members, go ahead and speak up.
Madam Chair, I think this is John Marshall. Kevin Drake had indicated on the chat that he wishes to make comment.
Thank you, John. I don't see that one, but go ahead, Kevin.
I didn't have any clarifying questions. I thought the presentation was very clear, and a few of our other board members have brought up a few specifics, but really I've just got a few comments of support. In overall, we're going into something that is, there are many things changing as fast in our life as transportation and modes of transportation and options. And I think this is really going to be a true test of our ability to effectively use adaptive management, because things are changing quickly and there are a lot of model assumptions that we have to use here, and we have to use this as a hypothesis to be tested. And I'm happy to see that there are defined management responses built in, just with clear triggers. I think that builds in some clear accountability for those that might be skeptical in the public. But in general, this is a very well thought out plan. Nothing's perfect, but it strikes a balance between more streamlined environmental review for the kinds of projects we need to see, and moving the region towards a more modern transportation standard. So I'm supportive. I don't have any specific questions. Thanks, staff, for the great presentations.
Thank you, Kevin. All right, since there's a bit of a pause, I will jump in. Dan, you're going to find that you're largely on the hot seat for me. Sorry. But I spent quite a bit of time looking at the threshold update initiative document that was prepared related to the VMT. So one of the things that I noticed under the project in general is that, you know, what we're really talking about, it looks like with VMT, if we're looking at going from essentially 12 average miles per person per day to 11 average miles per person per day, it seems like this is a really great opportunity for some really simple messaging to the residents and visitors of the basin. And unless I'm missing something, it looks like everybody just kind of needs to try to, you know, walk or bike or take a bus or whatever, just, you know, even an average of 1 mile a day. You know, if everybody could just reduce their automobile footprint by 1 mile a day, that we would all get closer to the goal. Is it really that simple?
From a goal attainment standpoint, it really is that simple. I think creating that environment where people actually do choose to travel a mile less, I think is far harder. And Michelle is probably better equipped to weigh in on the challenge of getting people out of their cars or getting people to drive a little bit less.
Thank you, Dan. Yeah, it's definitely been on my mind, Jennifer, and I have in my notes even here, right at my next to me, is like, what does that equate to? I want to talk to Dan about, is that one less auto trip a week, right? Transit Tuesdays, promoting something like that, doing rideshare Thursdays. Like, is it that, you know, really honing in and messaging? Because I do think it can be that simple.
That's fantastic. Yeah, because as we move forward and, you know, create partnerships and incentives like was talked about early on, you know, there's a lot of opportunity to work with our resort industry, you know, maybe to just identify more, you know, walkable options for folks, or the ease of hop on, hop off transportation to have people go from, you know, the hotels to somewhere where they'd like to be, where we just maybe find ways to make it easy for them through marketing. So that's really encouraging to hear that while it's a simple concept, there's a lot of strategies that are going to need to go into that. So so that's encouraging. Dan, specifically within, I'll call it your document on the threshold update initiative on page 16 or packet page 59. It talks about the highway performance monitoring system data that you're using. And it talks about it in respect to the Tahoe region. The Caltrans and NDOT published VMT estimates for their respective portions of the Tahoe region as part of their reporting requirements. Now, I'm sure it's in those links there, but is the Tahoe region In this context where you're getting the like a 1.5 million miles a year, is that the basin itself, or is the Tahoe region broader than that, like all the way from Reno to Sacramento or Reno to even the Bay Area? What's the context of the Tahoe region in that portion of the program?
So in that portion, it is the Tahoe region as we consider it. Prior to 2016, NDOT reporting did lump additional parts of Nevada into the region that included Tahoe. But we're lucky enough that in 2016, they changed their reporting to carve out the portion of the Tahoe region that is our MPO boundary, so that we do get, once we combine the two, a full region estimate.
Thanks, Dan. That's super interesting to realize that, collectively we're traveling 1.5 million miles a year just within the basin. So that's actually quite remarkable. So that sort of leads me also to a couple pages later where we talk about big data sources in your plan is page 19 or packet page 62. And I'm assuming those sort of big data sources are things like cell phone ping data, and that kind of thing. Is there an intention to ground truth, like the highway performance monitoring system information, or do we feel that's pretty accurate? Do we not need to invest in other sources of big data for more granularity or those sorts of things? I imagine big data is probably fairly expensive. So what's the thinking behind such big data sources in the future?
So it's actually a really good question, Jennifer. This is Dan Segan again for the record. So we explored as part of this process three or four different big data sources and the potential application of those both for threshold standard setting and evaluation, as well as for better understanding travel behavior. And I think I'll speak first to the data source of record for standard setting and evaluation. And I think one of the core criteria for that one was stability of measurement through time and reliability of the methods being used. And what HPMS offered really is a stable and both transparent and open estimate of VMT within our region that we believe is comparable through time and assesses relevant trends. I think as we looked into the big data platforms, which you're correct, really do draw from cell phone records, car GPS, et cetera, they do provide a great opportunity to understand individual travel patterns and better understand where people are going to and from within the region that we don't get from something like the HPMS. But what they didn't give us was the reliability through time. So I think we see the two fitting into our future plans in slightly different ways, where the HPMS provides the stable source that's the data set of record for establishing standard attainment or not. And then as we talk about the adaptive management process and really providing that advisory body with guidance on where we think people are going to and from and where we think there are opportunities to reduce VMT from a specific traveler type, be it day visitors, be it commuters, be it overnight visitors visiting the beach, we think we can really rely on the big data sets there to help us provide a more granular view of what's actually going on a day-to-day basis.
Thanks, Dan. That totally makes sense. One thing that I would note specifically about the document is that on page 22 or packet page 65, there's a reference to the state of Nevada now in the process of adopting California vehicle emission standards. And I just wanted to note that I have an edit to that just to be a little bit more accurate in where Nevada's at with our rulemaking effort. And I'll provide this to you offline as well. But we'd like that sentence to say that Nevada is evaluating adoption of California light duty vehicle emission standards. starting in model year 2025. We're very much still in the initial stages of that rulemaking process, so can't quite commit to have adopting the California emission standards quite yet, but we are in the process of working on the LEV/ZEV regs. So with that, I would also note that just reading through it and spending a lot of time with this document, I found a few typos, some missing words and whatnot. So I'm happy to provide a few of those offline, not obviously go into them ad nauseum here today. So Dan, I'll work with you to get a Word version of that document so that we can I can provide you things that I found.
I appreciate you not embarrassing me publicly.
No problem.
And Jennifer, I'd actually be happy to take the lead on that. Dan officially is on vacation, although he's here with us today. So please, send them my way.
I will do, Michelle. Thank you. And Dan, congratulations on finding time off. A comment sort of along those lines that I would actually suggest for all the documents is something that we found over time is that where we reference Nevada laws by bill number, we now do apply more effort in identifying the year that the bill was adopted, because California, Nevada laws, there's a Senate Bill 743 or a Senate Bill 375 every time, California meets. So I'd recommend adding the year of adoption to the references to California lawmaking for perpetuity and clarity. Because the common understanding that we all have now for what SB 743 might mean today will have a completely different context in the future. So. I have a question actually, I think for Michelle, that came out of looking at some of the public comments that we received. The RTP projects that are identified, I presume, whether someone has a particular interest or disinterest in a project that's listed in the RTP, all of those projects still have a long way to go, right? As far as planning, assessment of the projects, public engagement on the individual projects, constrained and unconstrained projects were mentioned earlier in passing in the presentation. I'm not real familiar with exactly what those terms mean in my normal day-to-day life, but Michelle, could you comment on the inclusion of projects in the RTP? And if someone doesn't like a particular project, what does that mean? What's the process going forward for putting those projects in motion?
Thank you, Jennifer. Yes. What I've tried to express, because you guys are you're very much focused on the policies. I didn't bring that into the presentation today, but the project list is a project list, but it is not an approval of the projects on that list. You said it perfectly. There are other processes in place, whether that be locally or even a permit from TRPA in the future. But what this is a visionary plan that wants to identify those projects and analyze them so we can kind of see where we're headed, what that future is going to look like. But by no means is it project approval. We've worked a lot when we received those comments with several folks on the North Shore to kind of guide them through that local process, whether that be an area plan update, right? For example, there are things in place and development kind of happens after the RTP. What's important here is that for a project to receive federal and state funds is it needs to be in the regional transportation plan. That doesn't mean it has to be necessarily a specific project on the list, but that it does have to be in the plan in some form or fashion. So that's the importance here. While we may not have every detail of the project laid out, like we talk about the trail around the lake, we don't know specifically where that trail is going to be connected and through. Is it above the road, below the road? But the plan is clear that we need to connect that trail to get to more transportation options. I hope that helps. But we do usually direct folks to those local planning efforts that are going on to ensure they have the input is heard, and we want that. Public outreach is such an important part of what we do here at TRPA.
Thank you, Michelle. That's really helpful. I think my last two questions are probably for Melanie. A couple times it was mentioned that the tool that staff uses or will be using to evaluate projects is developing. Now, when this goes through, assuming it, you know, gets through today and gets through governing board approval, when does this program actually go into effect? And, you know, how much time do you have to, like, make final tweaks to the tool and those sorts of things? When would, what's the effective date of all of this body of work?
Hello, Jennifer. It's Melanie Sloan. So I understand the code changes are 60 days before they get implemented. And so we will be continuing to develop the project impact assessment tool as well as, you know, the mitigation fees and so forth, as mentioned on that post-adoption over the next 60 days following action of the governing board.
Excellent. I'm glad you got some time to do those final modifications and polishing. And so my last question is for Melanie. You know, at last meeting, I had a question about mitigation permanence. And I'm sorry if I missed it somewhere in the packet. But are there any additional thoughts about mitigation permanence or ways to help ensure that that the mitigations that the projects identify are enforceable in the future? I think some ideas I threw out last time were like maybe incorporating them into special use permits or business licenses, or having some ability to encumber the title that runs with the land or those sorts of things. So where did that discussion end up?
So part of, Melanie Sloan again, part of the monitoring program is to ensure both that the mitigations in place are in place and that they're also effective so that we can adjust and modify over time. Regarding the permanence of the mitigation to the, you know, the transfer, I think is what you were referring to right there. We have another program, you know, it's something I would defer to John Marshall on as to the permanence of the mitigation and how we might do that in a legal sense. But I also wanted to highlight the travel demand management programs in the regional transportation plan, which Michelle mentioned a little bit earlier in response to another question. And so those are ways that as things evolve and change and it's no longer a new development, for example, we do have ways of ensuring VMT mitigations are in effect in our region. But if John Marshall or Michelle have others to add in regards to that.
This is John Marshall. I think you covered it. And unless Jennifer has additional questions.
Thank you.
Nope, that works for me. Thank you. All right, so that is the end of my questions and comments. Are has anything else come to mind for any of the APC members? Go ahead and speak up. I don't have anyone in the queue.
Maybe I'll just speak up, and this is Eric, and say that this morning, waiting for this meeting, I saw a television commercial from General Motors that is promising 30 new electric vehicle models sometime in the next 15 years, I think. And that's going to be, I know we talk about it on the side a little bit, but there will be a day when the greenhouse gas emissions from transportation is not nearly the big issue that it is today, and that day might be sooner than we think. Thanks.
Thanks, Eric. That is fairly exciting. Okay,
Another? Jennifer, this is John Marshall, and I just wanted to clarify one answer that was provided previously. Just to make certain that people understand that the code amendments take 60 days to go in effect, but the compact and regional plan changes are immediate. So it depends on where you're looking for.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
All right, so we will now move on to public comment for this set of agenda items. To participate in the meeting, go to trpa.gov in the calendar, click on Advisory Planning Commission meeting, April 14th, 2021. There you will have found a link to the public webinar hosted on GoToWebinar. If any member of the public wishes to address the Advisory Planning Commission, please use the hand-raising function now, and you will be unmuted by a TRPA staff member. So with that, staff, take it away.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Gavin Feiger, if you unmute on your end, you can address the APC.
Hey, morning. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Great. Gavin Feiger on behalf of the League to Save Lake Tahoe. Thanks to APC Chair and Commissioners, your direction over this whole process and guidance, and then the great questions today have definitely helped shape this whole VMT package. And big thanks to TRPA staff, Melanie, Michelle, and Dan here today, and then everybody behind the scenes. Everybody spent a lot of time with us specifically, with the league specifically, and with all the stakeholders. And we feel like we've been heard. We're still working through some of the details and reviewing, some of the documents here in the package. But we're generally supportive at this point. We're especially supportive of the triggers and automatic responses in the implementation section. They strike a good balance, of prescriptive versus adaptive. The project level screening, standards of significance, and mitigation actions and fees also strike a good balance. A good balance of state and TRPA regulations, and they reflect a good compromise between, what has been sometimes conflicting stakeholder input. So just to say, we're generally supportive, going over some details. We look forward to, getting this over the finish line this month, the VMT package and the regional transportation plan adoption. And we're just really inspired to work together to get these great plans funded and implemented. It's the only way we're going to achieve and maintain the new VMT threshold is through really implementing the regional transportation plan and the regional plan. And they'll help achieve our other goals. It's not just the VMT reduction and some associated greenhouse gas reduction, but that big vision of just helping get our community and visitors out of their cars. So thanks for your time throughout this whole process and today, and looking forward to the future.
Thank you, Mr. Feiger.
Carol Black, you're unmuted on my end. Hello, this is Carol Black. I didn't realize I had raised my hand, but okay. And before you start the clock, can you just give me 1 second? Okay. I had sent comments in about A2 and A3. I previously submitted comments. We, the TRPA RTP policies, goals, and projects, which are attached to my written comments today. Themes include community safety and neighborhood compatibility while preserving the environment, balancing, optimizing quality of life in communities and neighborhoods with business objectives, and maintaining flexibility in interventions to match community situations. In my view, these themes are important guideposts, and I've appreciated staff's willingness to discuss and consider and make adjustment. I prioritize two areas for emphasis today. Number one, the regional plan amendment transit section policy 2.8, which says ensure all transportation projects, programs, and policies meet the transportation needs and minimize negative impacts to disadvantaged communities and people with special needs. I wonder about the needs of the negative impacts for all communities. A separate policy addresses recreation, but I didn't find any parallel policy regarding the needs and impacts on communities and neighborhoods. So that's one suggestion. Second, in the code amendment section, I wondered why the following review elements were being removed. This is all in section 65.2. The governing board hearing officer review of projects, quote, resulting in a significant increase in traffic, et cetera, are removed. And in a later subsection, bicycle pedestrian transit projects are deemed screened from additional transportation impact assessment. Again, what about the community impacts as well as comprehensive environmental review? I specifically worry about projects such as the significant and years after opening only partially mitigated parking and traffic impacts of the East Shore Trail and the currently proposed Incline Mobility Hub, which is focused on an area that is viewed as traffic congestion safety risk and thus opposed by many residents. Even forgetting details, i.e. that the prior temporary and uncommitted use of the site for the East Shore Express has never apparently been evaluated for safety or neighborhood impacts, and B, that there is no comprehensive data-driven plan or environmental impact assessment re the hub proposal. Recent experience in the proposed site's very congested area reinforces community concerns. Within the last 2 weeks, the five-year-old child was struck by a vehicle near the site's street access and helicoptered to a Reno hospital for treatment. Now, after months of documented massive neighborhood objection, the Incline Hub concept remains an open option in planning documents and proposals. So more frequent follow-up metrics will help, and Michelle's recent reassurance will also help. Requests to broaden potential location options within Washoe County and also to enhance proposed interventions along the Route 28 corridor and elsewhere to increase safety and decrease congestion in Incline's small area by providing alternative earlier intercepts and more Route 28 options apparently risk not gaining significant traction. More detailed comment regarding this concern, and particularly the use of the EIC, which appears qualitative and suggests subjective versus comprehensive database review for public transit project evaluation, as will be applied to private projects, was also sent in the written comments. Please consider revisions to address these concerns, and thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Black.
Hello, Catherine. Jennifer.
Oh. Yes, go ahead, Melanie.
This is Melanie Sloan, and I had a little bit of a hard time hearing Ms. Black's comments, but I believe part of the concern is related to the project impact assessment and the approach to transit and active transportation and the assessment process. And I wanted to be able to respond to that in regards to its VMT evaluation. So we do currently have active transportation, which includes bike, ped, and transit, included as a screening criteria in the framework. However, mobility hubs are a bit more complex and may require additional analysis besides the VMT analysis described in the code changes for project impact assessment and mitigation fees. It's a question that she brought to us and that I'm working with our consultant Baron Peers to understand better. I think I would like to talk more with Carol Black about her concerns following this meeting, and I'd like to follow up with that.
Thank you very much. And for the parts that did not come through clearly, it sounded to me, and I was tracking against the written comments that we received from Ms. Black this morning. So I think between what you heard and what we received this morning, you'll have the picture of Ms. Black's testimony here this morning. And thank you for working with her, offering to work with her on an ongoing basis between now and governing board.
Yes, thank you.
Catherine, do we have another public comment in the queue?
We do, Madam Chair. Thank you. Sophie Wenzel, you're unmuted on my end. You unmute yourself, then you can address the APC.
Good morning. Thank you. This is Sophie Wenzel on behalf of the California Attorney General's Office speaking at a staff level. I just want to say thank you to staff for the excellent presentations today, and thank you to the APC members for your great questions today and the robust discussion. My office continues to have conversations with staff about the proposed threshold update. We have some outstanding questions and concerns, but our conversations with staff seem to be heading in the right direction, and we are hopeful that we will find a resolution to those concerns. So thank you all. Appreciate the time.
Thank you, Ms. Wenzel. Catherine?
Thank you, Madam Chair. At this time, we have no other hands raised to make a public comment.
All right. Well, thank you for coordinating that. I appreciate that. So at this point, are there any further questions or comments from APC members? And Hillary has indicated that she has a follow-up, so go ahead, Hillary.
Thank you. Hillary Roberud with the City of South Lake Tahoe. One nitpicky item that falls along the lines of safety, traffic safety, on Goal 4, Policy 4.4 in the policy document, can we add the word safe to coordinate policies across multiple partners to support the safe use of electric-assisted low-speed devices on paths and trails to serve travel needs in Tahoe? Just one nitpicky suggestion there. And then I wanted to comment on the timing and the rollout. I am a little bit concerned with the time frame. If this package is adopted by the governing board on the 28th and the code amendments are effective 60 days later, little bit concerned with being able to have the project impact analysis tool ready and educate our staff who administers our MOU with TRPA and does the TRPA review on a lot of projects well enough to be able to then educate the public and applicants. We do have folks out there that are programming and designing projects right now that this is not on their radar, and they really won't have the ability to figure out whether they're going to be screened or need to do additional assessment until that tool is available. So just something to consider, and I would just ask that the TRPA staff keep that in mind. I'm not sure the timing that you're thinking on rolling out the tool and then doing training sessions and availability to help us get familiar with that. Thank you.
This is Melanie Sloan. I'll respond to the last comment that you made, Hillary, in regards to the rollout. I know when we spoke last week, that was a concern you shared and something that I have brought back internally and discussed. So not being presumptive, obviously, we seek recommendations and then action, but looking forward to developing a plan for the rollout specifically. And I think we'll be in touch likely next week with what that might look like to ensure that your staff and other jurisdictions' staff are prepared to implement the updated processes and be familiar with the tool by the end of those 60 days. So I will be in touch next week.
This is Michelle, and I'm happy to add safety into policy 4.4. Thank you, Hillary, a great addition. And as Melanie mentioned, we're definitely going to be hitting this next phase running, no rest for the weary, and incorporating our locals in the rollout and plans for education and making sure you guys, are up to speed with the public and your applicants.
Thank you, staff. Hillary, any other follow-ups?
No, thank you, Michelle and Melanie. Appreciate it.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Steve, go right ahead.
So Steve Beshear, for the record, a couple of comments based on comments by colleague APC members before the public hearing and some of the public hearing comments. First of all, I do want to add my thanks to the staff for the general public outreach, in particular for the RTP public outreach, which was significant. And then the stakeholder outreach, which many of us have participated in, principally around the VMT and the VMT fee structure, but also the RTP. So staff has done a lot of work. There's a lot of material in here. I consistently talk about the need for sustainable regional funding. I'm a little concerned when I hear people talk about, the federal infrastructure bill as if it's a done deal. I can remember many conversations in each session of Congress about an infrastructure bill, and it just doesn't happen. Now, I hope, as many of us do, that, this time will be different. But I think we get spoiled at Tahoe by thinking that the feds or the states are going to continually bail us out with some new funding. And I don't believe that's true, and I don't want us to wait for something that might be out there and back away from the commitment that this regional transportation plan makes us step forward for, and that is to find some sustainable funding sources that we control in our own region. One of the big problems with state and federal funding is it always comes with strings. And those of you familiar with funding for transit or transportation projects, it's really broken up into a lot of different pieces, and it makes it extremely difficult to fund a particular transit service or a transportation project with money that's broken up, typically the way that transportation and transit funding is broken up. So I hope we're not backing away from any commitment to working on a regional transportation fund, transit fund, whatever those things are. We have a commitment in this plan, in my view, to do that, and we should stick with that commitment. We appreciate the sessions that we've had with Ms. Sloan, and I'll put on my Tahoe Chamber hat now and say from the business community perspective, there is trepidation in the development community about the VMT fee, but we've had a number of opportunities to meet with Ms. Sloan and to go over it. She's made some changes, and we understand that the fee structure is going to be developed subsequent to the approval of these items, and so we look forward to working with that. I certainly would agree with Ms. Roverud that the timing of all this coming out in the midst of the, quote, development season is a challenge, and I'm glad to hear that staff is going to be taking that into account. There's only so much that those of us representing the business community can do with a very large business community, and those who develop projects and those who are consultants for projects, you know, they need to be educated individually, so or in group settings where they can really learn what they need to talk to their clients about and make sure their clients understand. So that timing is particularly important. There's a lot of really interesting information in the packet, and of course, I can't talk about all of it, but one suggestion I'd like to make to staff and maybe a future presentation to the APC would be something that I found particularly interesting, and that's in the packet. It's called the Tahoe Effective Population Model, and it's an estimation of the effective traveling population of the Lake Tahoe region. If you've had a chance to look through that, it has a lot of information in there that responds to questions we hear all the time about how many visitors or how many people commute in or out of the basin. So there's a lot of information in there, and perhaps the agency staff would consider on a separate item, on a separate meeting, kind of going over that particular document, since it really does seem to answer a lot of questions, although I share Mr. Young's comments and others, you know, that sometimes the data for us is not as straightforward as it might otherwise be. But I really think that's an interesting document and would love to see it be the subject of a separate presentation at some point in the near future for the APC. So those are my comments. I think adaptive management is key. And again, appreciate all the outreach that staff has done to the general public and to the stakeholder groups. Thank you.
Thank you, Steve. TRPA staff, any particular feedback on Steve's comments?
This is Dan Segan for the record. Just on the last point with regard to the Tahoe Effective Population Model, that was developed with our partners at the Tahoe Science Advisory Council, and they're planning a special session to work through some of that work. I believe that's going to be scheduled later in May. So I'm happy to keep everyone in the loop on when that's scheduled, because those are open meetings. And we'd be happy to bring the effective population model forward for a presentation later on as well.
Thank you, Dan.
Welcome, Steve.
And this is Melanie Sloan, and I'll just thank Steve for the comments and recognition of the work that we have done around the project impact assessment and mitigation fee. Duly noted about the interest in setting the fee, and as mentioned in my presentation, we anticipate working very closely and continuing conversations, including groups or one-on-one as suggested, as we go through the post-adoption items, including fee setting. So please know I remain committed to continuing those types of conversations.
I know you do. Thank you, Melanie.
Thank you. Other APC members? I just have a couple of things. One, I did forget earlier, just in regard to the compliance measure review table that starts on page 200 of the packet. I know I've struggled with this particular table in the past, and exactly how it's used. My review of it, I kind of focused on the comment column, and I would just ask that staff take a close look at that the column, just to make sure that the yes no column isn't incongruous with the comment column, like in line 12 in particular. There's a yes, it's affected, but then the comments indicate that it's not really in effect. So I would encourage staff to just do a little QAQC on that before the governing board. The other thing I wanted to note is in regard to, you know, Hillary mentioned the word safety in a comment that she made a couple minutes ago. And I noted when I looked at Ms. Black's comments that we received this morning, and as she testified here, she's also interested in concepts related to community safety. And I do recall, I can't probably use quite the right terms, but the plans do call for, you know, the local jurisdictions to use traffic incident metrics or something like that to review, you know, the safety of certain projects elements. But I am interested in seeing how additional work might be done between TRPA staff and Ms. Black, as was committed to, because I am sensitive to her comments about not just making sure that the transportation system itself is safe, but that we're ensuring that the surrounding communities are safe as well. And I think that may be inherent, but if it needs to be more explicit, I would encourage some thought along those lines as well between now and the governing board packet preparation. So, all right. So is there anything else for the good of the order before we move on? All right, I am ready to entertain motions on these agenda items. The motions are set forth on page 25 of the packet, except please note that we will not be taking the last motion on recommending, the last recommended motion for the APC. We're addressing the first three that you can actually also now see on your screen. In order for a motion to pass, an affirmative vote of a majority of the quorum of the committee is required. So I will entertain the first motion that is before us today. Do I have an APC member willing to tackle the first motion?
Ms. Carr, this is Hillary Riverwood.
Thank you, Hillary. Go ahead.
Just a quick question. There were quite a few comments from APC members just requesting the staff kind of look into different things or consider things as they're preparing the governing board packet. Do those need to be included in the motion?
Go ahead, John.
Yes. I just hit a button that somehow erased my whole screen now. How do I? Anyway, yes, Hillary, I've tracked several of the language changes that when we get to motions, particularly motion three, I'll add in some of those, you know, the errata plus a couple of different changes. But yes, please make, you know, it's not particularly important for the first, I think for the first finding or for the motion on the findings, but for the second and third motions, please include that general direction in your motion.
Okay, thank you. I did not track all of the comments from the APC, so I'll make the first motion and let you guide through the next ones. I make a motion to recommend governing board approval of the required findings, including a finding of no significant effect for amendments to thresholds, regional plan and code of ordinances as provided attachments K, L, and M. Actually, there may be a couple of those code changes that need to be incorporated in that. Were there any on your list, John?
Not to be included within the findings.
Okay.
But in the second and third motion, or actually just in the third motion.
Okay. Then I've made that motion.
Eric Young, second.
Thank you, Hillary and Eric. So we have a motion. Any discussion from the committee? Any comments or questions on the motion? Hearing none, I will pass this back to TRPA staff for a roll call vote, please.
Thank you. Mr. Oling?
Aye.
Ms. Chandler?
Aye.
Mr. Booth?
Aye.
Mr. Drake?
Aye.
Mr. Calicrate? Mr. Gavon? Ms. Jacobson?
Yes.
Mr. Plemmel?
Aye.
Ms. Roverud?
Aye.
Mr. Smokey?
Aye.
Ms. Stella? Ms. Stella?
Aye.
Mr. Teixeira?
Yes.
Mr. Young?
Yes.
And Ms. Carr?
That is a yes from me. Thank you.
Madam Chair, that motion carries.
Thank you very much. Can I get a motion for number two from the committee, please?
I'll go ahead and make the second motion. This is Kevin Drake.
Thank you, Kevin. Go ahead.
I'm making a motion to recommend governing board adoption of ordinance 21-notes. Where are my notes? Does anybody have quick access to the ordinance number?
I think that gets filled in later, Kevin.
Yeah, Kevin, okay, this is John Marshall. Just say blank.
Thank you. We'll start over. We're making a motion to recommend governing board adoption of Ordinance 21, amending Ordinance 2019-03 as previously amended to amend air quality threshold standard 14 as set forth in attachment N1 of the staff report.
Thank you. Do I have a second?
This is Crystal Jacobson. I second that motion.
Thank you very much. Back to TRPA staff for the roll call vote.
Thank you. Ms. Chandler?
Aye.
Mr. Drake?
Aye.
Mr. Oling?
Aye.
Mr. Booth?
Aye.
Mr. Calicrate? Mr. Gavon? Ms. Jacobson?
Yes.
Mr. Plemmel?
Aye.
Mr. Young?
Yes.
Ms. Roverud?
Aye.
Ms. Stala?
Aye.
Mr. Smokey?
Aye.
Mr. Teixeira?
Yes.
And Ms. Carr?
Yes, thank you. My apologies to the committee members. I did forget to offer any questions or comments on the motion. I will back up to that step just in case. Or any questions, comments, or concerns about the second motion? Hearing none, that motion passes. Okay, so we're up to the third motion for us in front of us today. Could I get a committee member interested in making that motion, possibly with the assistance of Mr. Marshall?
Hi, Vice Chair. This is Ellery Stoller. I can make that motion.
Thank you, Ellery. Go right ahead.
I'd like to make a motion to recommend Governing Board adoption of Ordinance 21 blank, amending Ordinances 87-9 and 2019-03 as previously amended to amend the Regional Plan Goals and Policies and Code of Ordinances as set forth in Attachment N2 of the staff report and in consideration of Advisory Planning Commission committee member recommendations.
This is John Marshall. I would it be okay to add in the corrections identified in the errata sheet dated April 14th, 2021, as well as the following additional edits to policy 2.11, essentially deleting as part of local area plans or expanding that language to include not just area plans. The policy 4.4, adding in the word safe to read support the safe use of electric assisted low speed devices. And then generally to look at policy 5.5 to consider adding in federal partners, to look at policies, particularly policies 2.1 and 5.4, as well as generally to add in references to tribal governments. And that, I think, are the specific, all the only specific other ones that I have.
John Marshall, this is Joanne Marchetta. There was one that Jennifer asked for to modify packet page 65 concerning California emission standards. Nevada is evaluating California emission standards.
Yeah, that's not a code change or a regional plan change. We don't need to include that in motion, but Jennifer, rest assured, we will make those edits to the staff reports for the governing board.
Thank you. So Ellery, is your motion so amended with the additional detail from Mr. Marshall?
Yes, so amended with the corrections and additions supplied by Mr. Marshall.
Does that work, John?
It does.
Thank you. All right, we have a motion. Do we have a second?
Sue Chandler, I will second that.
Thank you very much. All right, this time, any discussion from the committee, comments, or questions? In particular, did we miss anything?
Hi, this is Hillary Roverud. If Ms. Stoller would consider including in her motion, requesting that the TRPA staff also look at the consistency in the language between the policies and the city code on affordable and workforce housing, and also look at the ensuring that the section 65.2.5 use and distribution of mitigation funds specifically references projects that reduce VMT.
Thank you, Ellery. Are you willing to amend your motion to include those?
I am. If there are no other points of discussion from other committee members? Okay, Ms. Vice Chair, I would like to amend my motion to also include the consistency and other considerations as supplied by Ms. Roverud.
Thank you. Ms. Chandler, are you willing to?
Yes, I'm willing to second that motion. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, any further discussion from the committee, comments, or questions? All right, sounds like we have a motion. Go ahead, TRPA staff, for the roll call vote.
Thank you. Mr. Young? Mr. Young?
Yes.
Mr. Teixeira?
Yes.
Mr. Smokey?
Aye.
Ms. Roverud?
Aye.
Ms. Stala?
Aye.
Mr. Plummel?
Aye.
Ms. Jacobson?
Yes.
Mr. Drake?
Yes.
Mr. Gavon? Mr. Calicrate? Mr. Booth?
Aye.
Ms. Chandler?
Aye.
Mr. Olling?
Aye.
Ms. Carr?
Yes, thank you very much. So that motion passes. Thank you everyone for hanging with us. It's been a fairly long meeting, especially to do virtually. So I appreciate everyone making it all the way through. This is a fairly monumentous event, and I appreciate everyone's time and attention, not just today, but in reading the packet and preparing for the meeting. We do have a couple more agenda items to get through, but hopefully they'll be relatively quick. So we're on to agenda item number 6. Go ahead, Mr. Hester, on your executive director report. Starting on page 625 of your packet.
All right. First of all, thank you, Madam Vice Chair, for doing a great job with significant package of items. In your packet is the annual report. If you have any questions after we're doing that, please let us know. And then a bit of sort of bittersweet news. APC member Lee Plimmel will be leaving us because he's retiring from Carson City. I've known Lee for years as a colleague, even before my time at TRPA. He's always been taken a very steady and professional approach to things. He's represented Carson City effectively and also participated as a regional partner, always adding value. We'll miss Lee, but hopefully this isn't his last meeting because we'd like him to join us next month so we can honor him have an agenda item to honor him and his contribution. So just wanted to pass that along and tell Lee not to clear his calendar of all APC meetings yet. And that's my report.
Thank you, John. Lee, sorry to hear that, but congratulations on your retirement. It's well earned, and I'm sure you're very much looking forward to it. Any, aside from next month's meeting, any special words of advice to the remaining committee members after you retire?
Oh, no, thank you. Thank you. Thanks, John. He didn't let me just quietly sneak out of this, I guess, and had to point it out. I planned on saying thanks to everybody. I've been, like you said, I've been, for the 20 years I've been with Carson City, I've been on the APC. I think I served as an alternate for Douglas County some before that. So, I've been there before Joanne. I'd like, thank Joanne for all her work through these years. John Marshall's been there for, a long time through that too. There's not a lot of people that have been there as long as I have. And Dennis Zabaglo has been a good friend for a long time there. Thanks to Steve Teixeira for serving as the chair when he did and running great meetings. I mean, I think that's been good. And thanks to, you know, Brendan for the next generation taking over and doing a good job running meetings. And Jennifer, my former next door neighbor, stepping up and doing that. You know, I for Carson City, I don't deal with the basin issues on a day-to-day basis like most of you do. So it's been a good education for me and a different perspective for me. It's been enjoyable, and things like this on the agenda today are really strong planning programs that make this interesting. So just to everybody there, keep up the good work. You do a great job, and keep making good recommendations to the governing board. And thanks for all your time there. Thank you for letting me say that.
Sure thing, Lee. Thank you. You will be missed. Absolutely. We even used to sit next to each other at the APC, you know, round table, and I'll miss having you as a neighbor there as well. So John Marshall, general counsel status report.
Nothing new, Madam Chair.
All right. So around the table with APC members, any updates? I'll go down through my list. Let's see, I'm alphabetical by first name. So Ellery.
Thank you, Vice Chair Carr. No, I have no updates this month. Thank you.
Thank you, Crystal.
Yeah, thank you. I've got just a few. On March 30th, our board approved an update to our short-term rental ordinance. It was what we consider kind of a minor cleanup of that ordinance to respond really to some areas of the code that was kind of causing confusion in the implementation of that program. So that was adopted on the 30th. The board also adopted a what we call a parking exemption pilot program in our town centers that really it expands an existing exemption in our town centers for redevelopment projects that are contributing to mobility funds or transit, any projects that really reduce VMT. Our board also approved on the 30th a micro shuttle program for the North Tahoe region. It's a fare free on-demand micro shuttle program that we are really excited about. It will be starting this summer, and then we are looking for it's a pilot for the summer, but we are looking for additional funds to carry that through on a permanent basis. And then finally, we're also working to bring forward the Truckee River recreational access plan. So this would include the trail segment from Squaw Valley to Truckee that is missing at the moment. And so we are about to embark upon environmental analysis on that that segment of trail. So that's it for me.
Thank you, Crystal. Eric Young.
Hello, everyone. Nothing new to report. Good job today, Jennifer. Thank you.
Thanks. You're too kind. Garth.
Nothing at this point in time. Thank you.
Thank you. Hillary?
Sure. Thank you. A couple of things. The city has adopted some objective residential design and development standards. So what that did was consolidated all of the development standards related to residential projects into one place in our code, so it's easier to use. Also created objective standards consistent with several different pieces of California legislation. Of note, parking standards are reduced for smaller units and for multifamily projects that meet certain design standards. They are eligible for a ministerial-only review through city permitting. Still require a TRPA permit, but then they can go straight to a building permit. And as part of that ordinance, we also adopted an accessory dwelling unit ordinance consistent with state law, and those go into effect tomorrow. And a couple of just community announcements. The California Rent Relief Program was launched by the state, providing financial assistance for low-income renters that have experienced impacts from COVID-19 and are past due on rent. You can go to the Housing is Key website or call 833-430-2122 for any renters or landlords looking for that rental assistance. And then lastly, the city is hosting a COVID-19 vaccine clinic on April 18th and 19th, so Sunday and Monday. If you go to the city's website under news, you'll see the information there as well as links to make an appointment. Thank you.
Thank you. Great information. Kevin?
No updates today. Thank you.
Thank you. Lee, any official updates as your member seat might dictate?
No additional comments. Thank you.
Great. Thanks. Mr. Booth?
Yes, thank you. The only update I would give is that tomorrow, on April 15th, the Board of County Commissioners will be hearing changes to the vacation home rental ordinance here in Douglas County. This is about the third or fourth hearing they've held on these items. They've made over 50 or so policy decisions on proposed items that would affect the vacation home rental ordinance in Douglas County. So far, they've got a few more decisions to make before a proposed ordinance would come forward, likely in May. And so this is a hot topic around the lake, I know, and many of the other jurisdictions. And just to let everyone know that that discussion will be continued tomorrow. And that's all I've got. Thank you.
Thank you. Chairman Smokey?
Thank you. I really only have one thing to update for everybody, just that now that we're coming into the start of the summer, we've been working with the Forestry Department, and we have been completely revamping our operational procedures at the Meeks Bay Resort, and so it's going to be under new management, and we're going to have a lot of big changes over there. And we're following everything along as the projects and planning that are going through with the trails and everything through the area. But I just look forward to another, hopefully a good year this year. We didn't get to do much last year because of not only because of the pandemic, but also because of the fires that were happening around and we were shut down in those areas. But that's pretty much the only thing I got for right now. So thank you.
Thank you. Steve.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to add, I completely agree with John Hester's description of the contributions that Lee Plemmel made to the APC and to Tahoe as a regional partner. Lee, we will indeed miss you. Thanks for being a solid member of this organization for a couple of decades. Really appreciate it. We'll miss you, but look forward to honoring you next month.
Thank you, Steve. Susan?
Nothing to add. Thank you.
Thank you very much. With Tim not joining with us today, I believe that brings us to the end of APC member comments. So we are now on agenda item 7, closing public interest comments. Members of the public participating in our virtual meeting via the GoToWebinar app on their computer, smartphone, or tablet should raise their hand now to indicate that they wish to speak and will be unmuted by TRPA staff. As a reminder, all public comments should be as brief and concise as possible so that all who wish to participate may do so. Testimony should not be repeated. I shall have the discretion to set appropriate time allotments for individual speakers, which we will do at 3 minutes for individuals or on group representatives. And let's see, no time for participants can be ceded to others. Written comments received prior to the meeting are forwarded to the APC members. In the interest of efficient meeting management, I can limit these comments to an hour if need be. I doubt it, but we can do that. And any unheard comments can be submitted via email to tcampbell@trpa.gov to be forwarded to all APC members. Please note the Advisory Planning Commission is prohibited by law from taking immediate action on or discussing issues raised by the public that are not listed on the agenda. Go ahead, TRPA staff.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just one more time for the public. The hand-raising button is on the left-hand side of your control panel if you would like to make a public comment to address the Advisory Planning Commission. And Madam Chair, there are no hands raised to make a public comment.
Thank you very much, Catherine. I appreciate your assistance today. So with that, do I have a motion to adjourn?
So move.
Moved by Steve?
Yes.
Awesome. Any opposed?
Good job, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Thank you. With no opposition, the motion carries. The meeting is adjourned at 12:26. Thank you, everybody, for your